WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. The Kremlin says Vladimir Putin met with U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff today ahead of President Trump's Friday deadline for reaching a ceasefire agreement with Ukraine. The BBC's Steve Rosenberg.
We haven't seen any signs, any signals from the Kremlin that it's willing to do a U-turn or make concessions in order to end the fighting.
Mr. Trump's threatened Russia with severe tariffs. We've found out more about the Justice Department's meetings with Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator, correspondent Ed O'Keefe.
CBS News has learned Ghislaine Maxwell said nothing during her nine-hour meeting with Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche in July that would be harmful to President Trump.
California's biggest wildfires, one in Los Padres National Forest, is growing. CBS's Jason Allen is in Santa Maria.
The wind has been pushing the fire through these canyons, and it is testing some of those containment lines. The weather isn't offering any help.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. People in Milwaukee can head to one of three city clinics to get a free measles vaccine. The Keenan Clinic on North 36th, the Northwest Health Center on Mill Road, and the Southside Health Center on South 23rd. Officials are stepping up efforts after measles cases were confirmed in Oconto County. Mayor Johnson reminds families that the vaccine is safe, free, and easy to get. Milwaukee has one of the lowest measles vaccination rates in Wisconsin. The noon expiration should be the end of the smoke, for now. An air quality advisory is in effect through noon as smoke from Canadian wildfires continues to impact the area. Conditions should start to improve by this afternoon, and officials don't expect to extend the advisory again. The Voting Rights Act is 60 years old today. And the Wisconsin League of Women Voters is marking the anniversary with an education event at the state capitol. Terry Barr has more.
The League is highlighting why the Voting Rights Act is a promise and needs to be protected. The U.S. Supreme Court is expected to hear cases which could change parts of the Voting Rights Act, including fair maps. Here's Wisconsin's League Executive Director, Deborah Krohn-Miller.
Our mission is to defend democracy and empower voters to elect your representatives. And those elected representatives are supposed to carry your voice to the Madison Capitol, to D.C., or to your municipal leader boards, and, you know, and when they fail to, that's the crisis that is the breach of our Constitution.
The Voting Rights Act is a federal statute which prohibits racial discrimination. It was signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson on August 6, 1965.
And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles. News at the top and bottom of the hour or anytime at WAUKradio.com.
Another Brewers victory. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers wrapping up their series with the Braves in Atlanta. Milwaukee winning again last night, 7-2. Manager Pat Murphy says now the games get tougher.
Yeah, this is a game that easily, you know, when the other team leaves 14 on base and only scores two runs, they certainly didn't get the big hit. So we were fortunate. We got to look at that as, oof, you know, we're fortunate to take advantage of some walks, but that's who we are.
NFL, the Packers signed Nate Hobbs to a four-year contract worth over $48 million, but he's not going to be in any preseason games. The defensive back says he needed surgery on his right knee after colliding with a teammate in practice last week.
I think it was Thursday's practice. It was a play. It was a collision. It was like slight, little minor bump. I felt like I always, you know, something I always get. Somebody ran into me. But it turned out to be something deeper than that. So.
That's Packers defensive back Nate Hobbs with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Sunshine today, a high near 81 degrees. Southeast winds at 5 to 10. Partly cloudy, a low of 69 tonight. On Thursday, mostly sunny, mid-80s. Upper 80s with sunshine for Friday, and the sun continues on Saturday. We will brush 90.
Right now, it's 62. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Laura McCoy, she is a member of the Green Bay School Board.
In the 1990s, revenue caps were put into place, and Green Bay was a conservative, low-spending district. Mm-hmm. We've been struggling with that basically ever since. The people in our community have stepped up again and again to pass referendums. That's wonderful, but we need that per-pupil increase. We need the cash to keep the lights on, basically, and to pay our staff what they deserve.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app, Matt and Air on Air.
Here's my gripe. MTV made it possible for really subpar performers to become stars. Madonna would never have been a star if it hadn't been for MTV and her grinding her way across the floor in a wedding dress.
See, that's where I think your gripe isn't with MTV. I think your gripe is with Madonna grinding on MTV.
Thank you, Matt from Richland Center. How dare you, Jane?
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome into the studio Northeast Wisconsin filmmaker Craig Kinnett and Northeast Wisconsin singer-songwriter DeAndre Marie performs live. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06. It's nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday, August 6th, 2025. Parker Olson is producing this show down in Madison Studio A2, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here as well. Brittany, we were talking about the musical Hamilton opening 10 years ago today. Have you seen it? Are you a Hamilton fan?
I have not seen it. No, okay. But I would love to. I would love to.
You would love it. What I learned over the news break here is that Parker here, he was in high school when this musical was peaking, and makes a unique claim about his knowledge of Hamilton. And that claim, Parker, would be?
I'm pretty sure I know just about every word to that entire show, I think.
And so, since we don't have a guest for, you know, another 28 minutes or so here, we're now going to turn the show over to Parker. That's and true. He's going to recite Hamilton, yeah. The clean, take out all the naughty words.
Something like two.
Take it away, buddy. How does never mind. In the very first line, there's words we can't say. So I guess we'll just have to go to weather instead.
How does it? Actually,
see? Mm. Yeah, you got it.
The first line.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm. We'll come back to it.
Shoot.
Yeah. We'll workshop this. In the meantime, we have been talking about the wildfire smoke, which, by the way, the advisories for at least parts of Wisconsin, this is the 23rd day, I believe, of advisories, exceeding the record from 2023. Not a record you really want to break, but we do appear to be on the tail end of it, Brittany.
Oh, let's hope so. It kind of went backwards this morning. Areas that aren't even in an air quality alert are seeing some of the highest levels throughout the state right now. Just south of Madison, you're in a red unhealthy level at the moment. It's orange, unhealthy for sensitive, pretty much all throughout central Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, and all of eastern Wisconsin. Still seeing that wildfire smoke, that fog, that thick haze out there. Hopes are that by this afternoon, it should clear the entire state. We've got winds starting to move out of the south. They're starting to get feisty, so they should gust around 15 to 20, hopefully, miles per hour this afternoon, kicking out that air mass and bringing in a new one. The new one comes with rain, more humidity and mugginess, and of course, hot temperatures as we push towards the weekend. So changing weather patterns completely here as the jet stream starts to lift north. We are looking at a low pressure just off to the west that is wrapping in a warm front to the western parts of the state right now. So that's where those south winds are coming from. And today we are going to hit the low to mid 80s. So getting a little bit warmer there. We will become mostly cloudy because we do have rain on the way. Light rain and drizzle is possible today, kind of working its way throughout the state. And then overnight, we got another round coming through with some more scattered showers, maybe some rumbles of thunder. No severe weather to worry about just yet. And of course, as we go into tomorrow, highs will be in the low to mid 80s. And we've got the mugginess seeping in at that point. It's going to get very hot and humid. Temperatures nearing 90 degrees on Friday and Saturday, and dew points in those 70s. So it's going to be feeling closer to those mid to upper 90s. And then the cold front hits. That'll be Saturday and into Sunday. That's where the severe weather chance moves in, and some heavy rain that could cause some flash flooding.
Ooh, so much to watch over the next few days here.
Yes.
Good morning from Tigerton, writes Rob on YouTube. It's partly cloudy with light fog and 58 degrees, still very smoky. Yesterday, I got 4 yards mowed west of Tigerton and had no breakdowns, which is something we always like to see. I went to the Tigerton Library after work to get the latest information on Highway 29 plans to put into my Highway 29 scrapbook, and then had tacos sponsored by Tigerton Main Street Incorporated. Yesterday was his sister Debbie and her husband Kevin's 30th wedding anniversary. Some lawns to mow and then a doctor's appointment in Shawano. And here's a traffic update from Tigerton. Beginning August 11th, there will be road work along 29 westbound between the Wolf River Bridge and the Highway 22 interchange. It'll be down to one lane in each direction, and the Highway 22 interchange ramps will be closed until late October.
Ooh,
take note.
Wow.
I know.
Jeez.
We would do more of these, but given what construction season is like in Wisconsin, that would take the whole 3 hours. So we're just going to put them in from the Tigerton area. If you want to add your own to the comment section, that's fine as well. Hey, Brittany, thanks so much. We'll talk to you in our next hour.
Sounds good. See ya.
All right. Reminder that you can always sign up for our newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com, including our Sunday morning newsletter about Wisconsin politics. And we have a question of the week this week that asks, how should blue states respond to the red state gerrymandering going on in Texas? Coming up across the Civic Media Radio Network later today, well, of course, you've got Matinee on Air, which follows this program from 9 to 11. Political strategist Joe Zepecki will be joining Jane and Greg just after 9:30. And then in the 10 o'clock hour, Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Again, Darren Von Ruden, not to be confused with Derek Van Orden, the congressman, who is decidedly not working in line with things the way the Wisconsin Farmers Union is. The Todd Alba Show is on from 2 to 4 this afternoon, and I'll be making an appearance there in the 2 o'clock hour, and maybe Trygve Olson from the Lincoln Project. I know that he is traveling, so he may or may not be checking in. He's so far away right now that we may actually have him on this show tomorrow morning, Trygve Olson, because we can't get him to wake up at 7 a.m. in Wisconsin, but it'll be well past that where he is. So we might have a Trygve Olson sighting, if not this afternoon, then tomorrow. And then Jim Santel is the guest host on the Maggie Dawn Show, starting at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Hey, Pete Schwabba's got a couple of guests this evening as well. At 6:30, he'll catch up with musician and photographer Chris Rogowski, and then Madison film critic Rob Thomas at 7:20. So much to see, so much to hear across the Civic Media Radio Network. You can see more over at their website, civicmedia.us. We've been talking more sports lately than we otherwise normally would. That's what happens when your team is on another winning streak. This one is 5 games after the Brewers beat up on Atlanta again last night, 7-2. So the winning streak is at 5. The lead over the Cubs is now 4, a 4-game lead in the National League Central Division. Freddy Peralta went 5 innings, giving up only 1 run on 4 hits. Andrew Vaughn singled in 2 runs, and he extended his hitting streak to 11, matching his career high. And National League Rookie of the Year candidate Isaac Collins drove in 2 runs on 2 hits. Jose Quintana will start Game 3, and once again, pregame at 5:40 this evening on several Civic Media stations. Then a travel day tomorrow as the Brewers come home and will have a weekend series against the Mets. Do we think the radio station tickets for the Brewers, those nice club seats, do we think they're all probably all snapped up by now? Right?
I do believe they're all snapped up. I think, it was whenever you were here, so like 2 weeks ago, I think I asked Luke for some tickets, might have been for this weekend, and he said, no, how about the end of the
month? About no?
Yeah. How about no?
Okay.
So, right. No. Yeah, it's Slim pickings, I believe, is the
term.
That's,
see, now that's what happens. If you want to go to a White Sox game, I mean, there's, there's tickets. If you want to go to a Twins game, it's already tough enough to be a fan of a sports team that is not doing well. In the social media era, you at least can laugh through the tears. The memes that have been put up, the TikTok videos that have been put up by Twins fans after the ownership had a fire sale, you know, last week. I mean, what was it? 10 out of the 26 players were traded away in some way, shape, or form. So you've got like the, you know, the John Travolta one from Pulp Fiction, or I think it's Pulp Fiction. He's just looking around the room, like looking. Is anybody here? And of course, they put him in Target Field. Looking around, is anybody here from this team? You've got from The Fresh Prince, when Will Smith comes down, you know, into the family home and like all the furniture is gone and everybody's gone. Like, where did they go? No shortage of movie clips that point out just how hard it is to be a Twins fan this year anymore.
I feel bad. Good baseball's fun.
We don't have to feel bad.
No, I don't care about. Here are the teams I don't like. The Cubs and the Cardinals.
Oh, well, that's a short list.
I think that, as far like that I care about not liking, those are the only ones. Yeah. I don't love the Yankees. But
I think the only team I would say I don't like in baseball would be the White Sox, because they had is he still there? Or is he gone now? That announcer of theirs. Hawk Harrelson or something like that. I mean, it was him and another announcer. And it's just that, you know, that Chicago tough guy thing where they just dump on all the other teams. They can't just call the game. They always felt the need to punch down back when they thought they were all tough. And then, of course, the White Sox, you know, before the Brewers were big rivals with the Cubs, the Brewers were in the American League.
Yeah.
And it was the White Sox games that got particularly nasty. I mean, in the couple of years before the Brewers switched from the American to the National League, those games, I'm not saying they were all bench-clearing brawls, but, you know, they got to be tense at times.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
And either way, you had to put up with Chicago fans coming up to Milwaukee. Yeah. And that's a thing.
That is a whole thing. Chicago sports fans are an interesting breed.
You know what, though? Over time, I mean, we used to say this about Bears fans, too, but, you know, when you spend enough time in the basement, you're eventually a little bit more humbled when you're able to, you know, come out of the basement and meet up with the rest of the folks. Bears fans have been better behaved. I'm not going to say well behaved. Don't get me wrong here, but they've been better behaved. Roger putting up on Facebook here. Hawks partner was Tom Pachorik. Yeah, it was him. And there was it John Rooney for a while was with them as well. Anyway, they were just so
Southside.
Yeah. So not fun to listen to. So for the Brewers to be having the kind of year that they're having, especially this lead up on the Cubs, if it can maintain, it's just going to make things that much sweeter. Plenty of things to see over at CourierNewsroom.com, Courier Newsroom being the parent company of Up North News. For example, there's Mark Jacob, who joins us on Friday mornings. He also has the Stop the Presses newsletter. You can also see it at stopthepresses.news. And this week in his newsletter, he says, will journalism become impossible in the U.S.? Trump's war on the free press is following the foreign dictator's playbook. And he outlines that. Let's see. We also have our friend Jennifer Scholze, who has a newsletter on Substack. You can find her newsletter, Indistinct Chatter, on Substack by searching for @NewsJennifer. She is talking about the Paramount merger with Skydance and its takeover of CBS. And in her newsletter this week, she says, a CBS investigative piece on the Epstein jail video broke important new ground. Under its new mega mandate, that story might never be allowed. And so you can look for that again from our friend Jennifer Scholze. And then back on Courier Newsroom on YouTube, go to youtube.com and then put in Courier HQ. And look for the series, How Is This Better, with Akilah Hughes. And again, this one is about the Trump media takeover and why Americans are increasingly split into the informed and the manipulated. So all that and more to find over at CourierNewsroom.com. A local update is coming up next for some of you. And then when we come back, we'll have this week's homeroom segment. We'll be talking to folks from Green Bay, from the school board, from the city council, about the ways that they created better taxpayer transparency when it came to the cost of voucher schools and how you can do that in your community as well. From the heart of America's Up North, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings, powered by Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee, 540 WAUK.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Keeping you connected to your local community with real news and great conversation. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
The 174-year-old Wisconsin State Fair is underway and is a finalist for USA Today's 10 Best list. Could it be the Cream Puffs? Here's Christy Chuckle with the fair.
The Cream Puffs was created to showcase the dairy industry in Wisconsin.
The story of Cream Puffs never gets old, and now renovations of the former Cream Puff Pavilion, renamed the Dairy Building, will show off a new kitchen and more.
Watch them being made right there, right before you buy them. That's why they're so delicious.
The bakers known as Team Cream Puff will be able to crank out more than 400,000 during the fair. They're even adding chocolate cream puffs for the first time. And it turns out there's a secret to eating them.
Just twist, open it. It doesn't necessarily squish all over, but some people just like to go for it.
So go for it and enjoy the tasty history of the state fair. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org, a message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back. Happy Wednesday. And here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. I'm not sure if you know this, but there's going to be a governor's race next year. You probably heard that. We're all talking about it. We're going to keep talking about it until next fall. And you may also know that current Governor Tony Evers will not seek a third term, which means on the Democratic side, people will start showing up to put their hats in the ring to find out who's going to be in the big chair in Madison come 2027. One of the names being talked about, and someone who has said he is planning on running but hasn't made an official announcement yet, is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. And I spoke to the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, aka BLOC, Angela Lang, to get her thoughts on the challenges as well as some of his strength he might face while he is on the campaign trail. Thank you so much, Angela Lang, for being here. What do you have that is uniquely southeastern Wisconsin today?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think one of the things that's really on the top of my mind is the governor's race.
Okay.
We know that the governor announced that he is not running for re-election, and the blogs and the group chats have all lit up with everyone's speculation of who's going to run. And naturally, there have been some names floated from Milwaukee, which I think is huge. I think it's a really good thing. As a lifelong Milwaukeean, that makes me very excited. And then I immediately realized and thought about some of the other Black folks that have run for statewide office, whether it be Mandela Barnes or Everett Mitchell for state Supreme Court, we've seen how Black men specifically have had to deal with a lot of racist dog whistles and racist tropes. And even bonus, if you come from Milwaukee, then there tends to be some anti-Milwaukee sentiment, which is just a bunch of dog whistles. And so while I'm excited to see folks that are in my age range that look like me potentially throw their hat in to run for governor, I'm not too thrilled about some of the backlash that they're probably going to get by even making that choice.
And that's something that we've talked about on Matt and Aaron Air with Dan. It's, you know, I am someone who believes full heartedly that David Crowley could be an excellent candidate for governor. And he has made it be known that he plans on throwing his hat in officially in the next few weeks. We don't know when that's going to be exactly, but I do have interest to see how he will run a campaign. And I did bring up the fact that, yes, the fact that he is a Black man, but also, and I would love to get your take on this, is being from Milwaukee almost as much a sticking point as the color of his skin? Because there is a great deal of people from around Wisconsin who say, well, Madison, Milwaukee won't tell me how to live my life. And then you put on top of that, that he's a man of color. It just feels like he's going to have to work 10 times harder.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the sticking point of this kind of establishment. Milwaukee and Madison get all the love, and so they have the most people, and we secretly run the state, I guess. I do think it's a challenge because I think that people view Madison and Milwaukee as a little bit out of touch with the rest of the state. And so I do think that that's going to be something he's going to have to just, you know, or any candidate for Milwaukee is going to have to prove. But we also know that when people kind of say that, they're hiding behind that dog whistle. Not everyone that says it does, like, right? I think there's some valid criticism about Madison, Milwaukee heavy. But I think in some cases, people are also using it as a dog whistle.
He also had to campaign through Milwaukee County. He's not the mayor of Milwaukee. He's not the alderman of a small district. He had to go to very affluent, very non-diverse portions of the county and say, I would like to be the person in charge of it. So I feel like that gives him, at the very least, some experience, a leg up, and the ability to take whatever, whether they're passive aggressive or just flat out aggressive comments come towards him. He'll know how to combat them. He'll know to say, look, I understand your concern. I know. And I'm not here to try to be the governor of Milwaukee. I want to be the governor for all of Wisconsin. I see him navigating that very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, something to be said is that I think if we're talking specifically about potential candidate County Executive Crowley, he does kind of have this relatability factor to other folks. We also remember that he was in the assembly as well. And so I think when people talk about, oh, Milwaukee, they don't have the name recognition or they can't do all of these things, I think, you know, we are able to have a conversation about these dog whistles this early on than having to have these conversations halfway through the campaign. And so I'm hoping anyone that's tuning in is also kind of thinking critically, or, you know, maybe have you all used the electability, quote unquote, dog whistle of, I like this person, but I don't think they can get elected statewide. I think there's a benefit that you and I are having this conversation over a year out from the election. So hopefully that's what primaries are. People can feel that they can vote for the best candidate and they're not feeling that those microaggressions that maybe people don't realize until they're too late.
Let me ask you something from your experience as from organizing, from being in the political world, from being a person of color in Milwaukee. Does it serve David Crowley better to stay ahead of it, maybe try to have either an ad or a piece of mail, something that says, like, I understand the hesitations, I'm here to talk about it, and make himself open to it rather than what some politicians can do and say, don't worry about it, we're a melting pot, we're Wisconsin. Does it do him better to confront it and kind of shut down the conversation before it can get out of hand? If you want to hear that answer, you're going to have to tune in for the next installment, because that is the first part of a two-part interview I did with Angela Lang from Block, Black Leaders Organizing Communities, about the 2026 governor's race. You can find out more about what she thinks regarding the candidates when I play the rest for you this week, so you don't want to miss it. Stick around. Angela is also a frequent guest co-host here at Civic Media, as well as a contributor to the Recombobulation Area. In fact, she's won awards. So if you want to find out more about her writings, go to the Recombobulation Area, subscribe, and see what she has to say about southeastern Wisconsin, specifically Milwaukee, which has been her home her entire life. Stick around, because after the news, Pat talks to Green Bay educators about keeping taxpayer money transparent by disclosing how much money goes into the voucher schools. So you don't want to miss that conversation. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Stephanie Hoff. Along with you, this is the Midwest Farm Report. Today, we're digging into a story that might hit close to home, or at least the kitchen table. Ground beef prices are on the rise. Market advisor John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing walks us through what's causing the price hike.
Well, we just saw some stats over the night that U.S. ground beef to the retail consumer is actually hitting its historic highs this last week. Some of that might be tied to a little bit of tariff play. We did put a 50% tariff on Brazilian imports, and we import a lot of beef from Brazil. That usually goes into trim, so that may be one of the reasons why the hamburger price is going higher. Trim, obviously, is the ground beef that we see that hits stores and restaurants. So we'll have to really watch that going forward in terms of that cattle market. Just the supplies of cattle are not out there, and that's going to be something that keeps prices elevated.
Historic highs on ground beef, something you may be noticing this summer as you prep burgers for the grill. Market advisor John Heinberg joining us from Total Farm Marketing in West Bend. I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report. I've got more farm news on the way.
Join our friends from Wisconsin Farmers Union in booth 607 and Midwest Farm Report at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days on Wednesday, August 6th at 2 p.m. Wisconsin Farmers Union is united to grow family agriculture. Visit wisconsinfarmersunion.com to learn more.
This year's Farm Technology Days is celebrating generations of progress August 5th through the 7th at Clinton Farms in Bear Creek, Wisconsin. This year's show takes a glimpse into the future of agriculture with technology and technique. Visit wifarmtechdays.org for a full schedule of events.
Unique farming operations need unique financial solutions. Ag Country Farm Credit Services offers customized financing that fits any size farm, ranch, or agribusiness. The next time you're in the market for more land, equipment, facilities, or maybe even an operating loan, contact the team at Ag Country. They know agriculture and will work for you. Ag Country. Focused on ag, focused on you. Ag Country is an equal opportunity lender.
It was a busy week for Wisconsin farmers with nearly six whole days suitable for field work. Harvest is underway for small grains and hay, while soil moisture remains mostly favorable. Nearly 80% of corn has reached the silking stage. That's 5 days ahead of last year. Corn and soybeans are both holding steady at 81% good to excellent, though that did dip slightly from last week. Soybeans are moving along with more than 80% blooming and more than half setting pods. That's ahead of both last year and the five-year average. Winter wheat harvest is 67% complete, running a bit behind. But potato harvest has just begun, and that crop quality is excellent, 96% rated good to excellent. And on the hay front, second cutting is nearly done, and the third is halfway there. That's according to the latest crop progress and condition report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
As Wisconsin has a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Sunshine today, a high near 81 degrees. Southeast winds at 5 to 10. Partly cloudy, a low of 69 tonight. On Thursday, mostly sunny, mid-80s. Upper 80s with sunshine for Friday, and the sun continues on Saturday. We will brush 90. Right now, it's 62.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Actor Neil McDonough. If you saw his face or if you Google him right now, you'll recognize him. He refuses to kiss another woman on camera. On the one hand, I applaud him for not kissing anyone other than his wife. But she says, I don't have a problem with him if he wanted to kiss another woman. As someone who's done it, it doesn't really feel like cheating because there's people in the room. It's very mechanical.
You did write it yourself.
I did write it myself.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Are you a little frustrated with how voting is going in Wisconsin? Well, tomorrow we'll talk about a possible solution called fusion voting. Join us live on location from La Crosse for Leader Ethics and Fusion Voting.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Welcome to our weekly homeroom segment where we highlight public education in Wisconsin and the opportunities and especially the threats to it, including the lack of taxpayer transparency when it comes to things like the ongoing voucher school movement in Wisconsin. And today's topic takes me back several years to 2017, particularly when I was helping my friend, then State Representative Dana Walks, in his campaign for governor. And one of the things that he liked to talk about that he thought not enough people were talking about was that need for greater taxpayer transparency on property tax bills. That not enough was being done to let taxpayers know that when they see that line on their property tax bill that says, you know, school district of Chippewa Falls, that not all that money is going to the school district of Chippewa Falls. In fact, a lot of money is skimmed off the top and put into the voucher program, but the taxpayer wouldn't know it. Dana Walks wrote a bill that called for that chunk of money to be, you know, put separately on the property tax bill. Republicans in the legislature year after year said no, that they weren't going to require that through state law. Some folks in Green Bay said, well, maybe we need to make that happen at the local level. And they recently did, and they're here to talk about how you could do that same thing in your hometown and have, again, greater taxpayer transparency. This isn't about whether voucher schools should exist, and this time around, it's not even whether they should get state funding, though I'd argue that they shouldn't. But at the very least, you should know how much of your tax dollars go to that when it's on your property tax bill. So we welcome back to the program our friend Denise Gomer Hutchinson from Wisconsin Public Education Network. We're also happy to be joined by Laura McCoy of the Green Bay School Board and Alyssa Prophet, who's an alder on the Green Bay City Council. Nice to have all of you here. Thank you, Denise, Laura, Alyssa. Good to see you all.
It's nice to be here.
Denise, let us start with you. I know we've talked to you about this previously, but lead us up into what happened in Green Bay. In other words, before we even get to what they did, maybe you can say, you'll say it better than I can. Why is it important to have this kind of transparency on property tax bills?
Well, it's critical for taxpayers to make well-informed decisions on if they support future referendums, but also just to know and understand where their tax dollars are going.
Yeah. And so, again, the state legislature wasn't making this happen. Laura, do you want to pick up the story and talk about how things started to get rolling in Green Bay?
Yes. In the fall of 2023, our school board passed a resolution asking the city council of the various municipalities that fall underneath the Green Bay School District umbrella to please include this this information on their tax bill. We started with Green Bay, which is obviously the largest municipality. We passed the resolution, our board passed it unanimously. It went before the city council the following January, and it got tabled. It didn't pass, and they didn't even take a vote. What happened is that this is where Alyssa comes in. She was elected the following April, and brought this back to the city council. The upmake of their city council had changed, and she really pushed hard for this.
Alyssa, why don't you go ahead and take the baton from there to talk about how you got started in this process?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm thankful to know both Denise and Laura, who are great advocates for public education. I also value public education. I have a kindergartner and first grader starting up in about a month here at Green Bay Public School. This was a conversation that I hate to say was easy at the start, right? Because I've yet to talk to a voter who wants less transparency when it comes to where their tax dollars are going. They want more. And in this conversation, like, where do we put it? I believe there's a few pieces of mail that taxpayers will look at and take seriously, and that's likely their W-2 documents if they still receive those via mail, and it's their tax bill, it's their property tax bill. The entirety of the council sees calls go up when it's that time of year, right? So really what I did from there was bring back a communication really for just staff to investigate the feasibility. That's the first step, is really like, can we get our staff who are phenomenal at the city of Green Bay. They're willing to run with a lot of things that the council wants to look into, right? So that was the first step. We thankfully got that through committee level. Our worked legal and finance worked with the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, showed examples of where and what we were looking to do. They came back, and Wisconsin Department of Revenue was really our end all, or you know, the final say when it comes to the feasibility piece. They said, yeah, yes, we can do that. And the imaging that was shown was then sent back to council to discuss further. Was an interesting night at council in terms of who spoke in favor and who spoke against. So I can maybe let Laura or Denise speak to that a little further. But thankfully, it did pass. Unfortunately, when a lot of things pass easy in this cycle for us, this one was not. It was a 6-6, and it was broken by the mayor. But it was a pass, so we'll take that.
Well, without a doubt. So once you looked at the feasibility, I'm wondering if part of it too was then the cost. It's one thing to say you want the transparency, but A, you have to go get the numbers, and then B, you have to change the way that you do your property tax bills to put it out there. Was cost any kind of a consideration in this as well, Alyssa?
That was certainly a question from a number of alders as well. And our finance department is the one who creates and does the work there. And then the county is the one who prints the bill. So from a city perspective, our staff said to them, this would be $0 cost. I mean, they said it's work that we're already doing. It's something that if that's what the body wants. It was kind of funny, the discussion, you know, folks were like, well, what else can we add to it? And they're like, yeah, what else do you want to add? I mean, it's printed for the city of Green Bay. Like, yeah, so cost certainly was a factor, but staff was confident in saying that it wouldn't be at any additional cost for us.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. It is sometimes politically convenient when you want costs itemized. I recall being in the legislature and hearing Republicans say, well, there should be a Google. Government should be essentially like a checkbook where you can look line by line at, you know, all the things that cost taxpayers money, which nobody really totally disagrees with, Denise, unless you're looking for obfuscation. And so it's one thing about whether, you know, it's feasible to get the numbers. It's another thing if you can afford to put the numbers on. But it seemed to me, first and foremost, the reason we weren't seeing these numbers on tax bills was that there were too many lawmakers trying to hide the cost of vouchers. And Wisconsin Public Education Network has basically made a cottage industry out of going, oh, we'll get those numbers for you.
Yes, we have. And that's been really important and valuable, because we're finding a lot of legislators and therefore also city council members have no idea what the costs are for the voucher program and also what the costs are on the taxpayers.
Right. And so that's Denise Gomer Hutchinson from Wisconsin Public Education Network. A moment ago, you heard from Alyssa Prophet on the city of Green Bay City Council. Now back to Laura McCoy on the Green Bay School Board. And again, this whole notion of getting the numbers and providing the transparency, this does not sound like it was a heavy lift for the school district of Green Bay, nor for any other school district. The transparency is something you would naturally want the taxpayer to have, it seems to me.
Yes, and I think that the indicator of the importance, the political importance of this statewide is who showed up at our city council that night to argue against voucher transparency. I think you might be interested to know that John Gard showed up and Kate Zeiske showed up to argue against this measure.
And remind people who they are.
John Gard used to be in the state legislature, and his wife, Kate Zeiske, used to be the secretary of
revenue, I believe, or and state treasurer. So, I mean, they've had leadership positions that were part of a legislature that was not looking to make these costs transparent. And as you just said, they're still arguing against that to this point. Let's carry it then to the next step, and that is other communities around Wisconsin, if they want to do this. And I don't know if the order in which you did it was the way that everybody should do it. Denise, do you want to go with this first, that if somebody just wants to start this from scratch in their particular school district, what are your recommended first steps? And then I'll ask Laura and Alyssa the same question.
Well, you'd want to contact Wisconsin Public Education Network. You can contact one of the regional, you can go to our website, find out information, how to get a hold of us, and we'll gladly have a conversation with you and get you all the background details. In fact, we have a toolkit that we're going to make available to communities that want to take this on. And yes, the first step is the school board writing that resolution and asking the city to do this, or the municipality or the township, because that's where it really has to start, is they have the information and they can move forward with it. Yep. So,
and that would be at wisconsinnetwork.org, a great website to learn more about taxpayer transparency. And so, yeah, let's, Laura, from a school board standpoint, again, if somebody is looking to get this going, what are your recommendations for first steps they should take?
Well, yes, as Denise said, it starts with that resolution. And since we were able to do this in Green Bay, people have been reaching out to me across the state. In fact, after I'm done here this morning, I'll be calling someone on the eastern part of the state who is very interested in trying this in their community. This issue is heating up. And I was in Milwaukee over the weekend to see Beto O'Rourke at a city hall kind of situation, and got up to speak and tell people about this, you know, what's going on. And I got to tell you that the room, when I told them that next year there might be as much as $800 million taken out of public education for the voucher program, I mean, this is, people are paying attention to this right now. So, you know, if this is important to you, if this is something you want to try to do, start with your school board. But you're also going to need your city officials. You're going to need the support of your community to some degree, as well as potentially your superintendent, maybe some statewide elected officials. In Green Bay, it took a team of people to take it through all the stages, and you know, in the end, that's what it took.
Alyssa, in our final minute here, from a city standpoint, again, whether somebody is hearing who is serving on a city council or is close to people who are, what should they do?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say reach out to Wisconsin Public Education, ask those questions, and you don't have to wait, I would say, from a city perspective, right, for your school board to take something up if this is something that interests you. I think we always hear how education funding is complicated. It is, but sit down, grab a coffee with someone like Denise, get an understanding, because even though you might be from a municipal perspective, you still have that municipality. You can increase some transparency for your township, and everyone should consider doing it. We can't wait for the state to act.
Time is now. And our friend Chris Hambuck Boyle puts on Facebook, what a team for the taxpayers, what community will be next? And it's true. Oh, wait, I want to make sure I get that right. I did say .org, right, on mine? Yes, WisconsinNetwork.org.
Yes,
okay, I saw in the comment section, somebody fixed theirs. And again, just want to make sure it was clear, WisconsinNetwork.org, to learn more. Laura McCoy from the Green Bay School Board, Alyssa Prophet, a District 7 alder in the city of Green Bay, Denise Gomer-Hutchison from Wisconsin Public Education Network. You guys are taxpayer rock stars indeed. Thank you so very much. Good to see you today.
Nice to be here.
All right. And again, this is something that you can do in your community as well. And I think back to Dana Wachs's original bill. This is a basic thing. The legislature should have done it years and years ago. They didn't, but you can. A local break is next for some of you. Others will catch up with Jimmy Cuska from Civic Media next. You're up north.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. You may think racial gerrymandering happened long ago and just in southern states with legacies of suppressing African Americans. Think again. Anti-voter legislatures around the country still employ racial gerrymandering to retain political power. In addition to recent racial gerrymandering cases involving African Americans in Alabama, Louisiana, Florida, South Carolina, Texas, and Arkansas, there have been multiple racial gerrymandering complaints from Native Americans in North Dakota and Hispanic Americans in Washington State and Texas. To provide equity and representation, the Voting Rights Act Section 2 allows districts of dense populations of minority voters to choose the candidate of their choice. But elected officials continue to evade those rules. South Carolina's legislature split Charleston by moving 30,000 residents from 11 of 12 of the highest concentrations of black voters into another district. In the words of the lower court, bleaching Congressional District 1. Louisiana's population is almost 33% black, but Louisiana's legislature defiantly drew only one of its six congressional districts as a majority-minority black district, diluting the rest of their vote. A county in North Dakota elected its commissioners at large to reduce the chance of a Native American candidate being elected. Tomorrow, we'll tell you how some states prohibit gerrymandering and create fair maps. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt and Air on Air.
I have a baby bird stuck in a birdhouse.
Its head is stuck.
Terry on the text line says, if you can detach the birdhouse, bring it to Ace Hardware, they can help get the bird out?
Really? Richard from Waukesha, you get the last word on this.
I like the idea of the Ace Hardware.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But some advice is don't let them talk you into a remodeled bathroom.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yes.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
NFL Hall of Famer, College Football Hall of Famer, Mr. Joe Thomas. You were telling us a little bit about being drafted number 3. You skipped the draft.
I went fishing that day, and I never did it for anything other than I just much rather spend the day fishing with my dad, and I'm hoping that that's a story that keeps being told and gives people a reason. Like, you know what, instead of working today, I'm going to go fishing with my kid. I'm going to make the time because it's impactful. It's memories that they're going to remember for the rest of their life.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app. Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. The history of baseball reaches back nearly 200 years, and part of that rich and illustrious history is the Negro Baseball League, which now may be gone, but it still has voices out there trying to tell its story. And one of those people is Dennis Biddle, the youngest member of the league who is still alive at 90. And he sat down with Earl Ingram on his new show, What's Going On with Earl Ingram, to talk about his experience growing up, his love and talent for sports, as well as his entrance into the legendary league.
So you as a young boy never got a chance to see a big league game. Is it safe to say that?
No.
Okay. So you never got to see a big league game. But you did get to play against some legendary Negro League ball players. Who are some of the names of the legendary ball players you got to play against?
You know,
and let's before I go there, When did the Negro League start? Do you have any idea when the Negro League started officially?
Oh, I knew that. I learned that it started in 1920. But before that, Earl, black men were playing in the major leagues. I didn't know that until later on. There were a lot of black men playing in the major leagues. So I looked into that, and I came up with names like Moses Fleetwood Walker and a lot of other guys. But what happened is they kicked them out. And I use that word loosely, kick. They just threw them out. And the way they did it, the way it was done is what gets me. All the owners got into a room and they voted that they would not hire another black man to play on the team. And like overnight, all the great black ball players that was playing in the Negro League and the Major League disappeared, and in the minor leagues too. And you didn't hear much about it until 20 years later, 1920, when Rube Foster decided we got enough team, we can have our own major league.
Well, you know, it's pretty safe to say that going back to the times and the history of our nation and what was taking place in those times, there was probably outcry from whites, white players and their families that black men were taking the jobs of
that was
white
in the
players.
Beginning. That was in the beginning. There were problems with the players and the team itself, because if you're the manager of a baseball team and you want to win, you want the best player you can get, right? So somehow the black players excel faster than the white players. I don't know why, but this was the thought in the beginning. If we don't, you know, a black player was coming into the major leagues and increasing the numbers. So they had to stop that influx. And the way they stopped it is like I told you. But later on in life, if you're a ball player, you feel you're good, you compete against another guy that's better than you, you're better than him.
Right.
You know, competition. The ball players themselves, and I'm going to say a majority of them, did not care.
Yeah, well, but it wasn't about the players. It was about the audience.
It was about
the people, the fans.
It was about the fans.
Yeah.
They did not like to see black and white men playing together because of segregation.
Right.
And now that was the big thing.
And let me say, too, they also, see, they had to maintain that inferiority complex.
Right.
And because the black men were excelling, that brought a certain amount of superiority, athletically at least, that they were not able to accept, right? So they could not allow that to continue because they had to maintain that superiority complex.
Yeah.
And so, but what's so interesting is when they did this, they called it the gentleman's agreement. That's what it was referred to in history books. It's referred to as the gentleman's agreement, where all the managers and the corporations got together and decided amongst themselves that they would no longer hire blacks in the major leagues. Well, as a result of that, because it wasn't a law, it became law.
Right.
It became legal to do so, which therefore caused businesses, schools, stores, restaurants to now say, well, we don't have to have blacks come in our store. We don't have to have them in our school, which therefore became the beginning of segregation in America. So that was catapulted as a result of that gentleman's agreement, which is very interesting, the significance of Negro League baseball to segregation in America.
So part of the reason why I wanted to go slow with Dennis is because of all that historical information that we're talking about now.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure we cover those things in this series and for people. This is just the beginning of our conversation. You might be wondering, well, you didn't even get into the Negro. Well, because all of this history, mm-hmm. is tied into the history of this nation, mm-hmm. and not just in sports, but the history of the nation. And that's what we want to make sure we capture in this podcast series.
The rest of that interview is available by going to civicmedia.us/shows. Search for What's Going On with Earl Ingram, and you can download it to your device and listen to it whenever, wherever you'd like. If you want to hear more about Earl's show, you can actually stick around, because after the news, Pat's going to be welcoming Earl Ingram to the program to talk about the podcast as well as all the other projects Earl's involved with. And of course, Brittany Merlot, Civic Media's meteorologist with the weather. So stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to WAUK Radio and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Bulldozers are clearing brush at Los Padres National Forest north of Los Angeles, where the state's largest wildfire has now chewed through more than 80,000 acres. CBS's Jason Allen is in Santa Maria.
The separation between black and green on the hillside is where firefighters have cut big fire breaks and use retardant to stop it here. But no sooner do they do that, the wind kicks up and the fire just pops up again somewhere else.
We've learned more about Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator and her interview with a top Trump administration official. CBS's Tina Krause.
Sources familiar with the matter tell CBS News Epstein's associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, did not implicate President Trump in Epstein's crimes during her recent meeting with Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche.
In Japan, a ceremony today marking 80 years since the U.S. dropped the world's first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah.